blood, scattering of the people. Be bold. But I don't know these. No, very good. That's good. Keep practicing those. Because that is the skeleton outline for everything, you know, we're doing. So, all right, turn over to Numbers chapter 22. All right. So we skimmed very quickly through the a couple of the last things. There's not a lot of information about them as it is, but the Israelites are tearing their way from. They were at where did they camp for so long? Kadesh Barnea, right? So that's down in this area. And as they came through, they passed by whom first? Edom. They passed by Edom, came through there, came up around the side. And they're now, well, what we covered in chapter 21, who came out to, they wanted to pass by Sihon and his area also. Sihon refused, so he, came out against them, and they completely, destroyed him and the Amorites. Remember, the Amorites, were in that area. And so, really, Israel is in control of everything from the Jabbok to the Arnon River. Now, and then they went on up and faced the nation of Bashan and Og and destroyed him. So they have these two areas. They haven't taken Gilead. That'll be done later. And Moab down here will be integral in our study today. Now, one of the things to remember is this layout here. It's helpful to know, you know, these, you know, it's pretty easy to say, oh, okay, there's the Mediterranean Sea. You know, most of us know the Sea of Galilee, Jordan River, Dead Sea. But how many of us have memorized the rivers that come out on the Transjordan or the east side of the Jordan? It's pretty easy, to learn, because on a bunch of the maps, this second river here, and they're land dividers, nation dividers. That's why it's kind of helpful. And they're referenced a few times. So if you notice the Jabbok River, in a lot of the maps, you can't depend on it completely. But what is that, if you turn your head over to the left, what does that look like coming off of the Jordan? It's like a J, doesn't it? So that's the Jabbok River. On a lot of maps, and I've cut this one off, but the Yarmouk, guess what it looks like if you turn your head over to the right? It's got kind of a Y, all right? So Yarmouk and Jabbok. And then the only two left are down here that coming off of the Dead Sea. And if you just remember going from A to Z, it's the Arnon to Zered, all right? So Yarmouk, Jabbok, Arnon, Zered. And I always tell the kids when I'm teaching them, it's not the blue, it's the red. And about 3 years after the fact, I had a kid, we said, well, what's the name of this river? And he said, blue something? No. So it doesn't always hit and affect it. But anyway, you've got the Yarmouk, the Jabbok, the Arnon, and the Zered. So they own, Israel's now in control of these two areas, here. All right. Now, with that, as they're going and conquering these large nations, and Sihon of the Canaanites, remember the whole land, everybody was kind of called Canaanites because it's the whole land of Canaan. Now, these were specific nations there, Sihon of king of the Amorites. But as far as it goes, he was one of the big ones. He was quite a large force, and Israel defeated him. Well, as you can imagine, that word spreads through all of Canaan very quickly and everyone starts getting afraid. And that's what we're going to talk about here tonight. In fact, or this morning, in chapter 22, we see Moab getting very, very afraid because they are, you know, as far as logistics, Israel is right there beside them. In fact, Israel has gone up around them and they're camped opposite of Jericho. So Jericho is on the left side of the Jordan and they're just opposite of that, right? Just across the Jordan. So that's where they're camped. So Moab and the king, Balak, is very concerned. And he's got a plan to figure this out and to work this out. And so in chapter 22, verse 3, it tells us what his condition is. Moab was in great fear because of the people, for they were numerous, and Moab was in dread of the sons of Israel. So they knew what was coming, or thought they knew what was coming. So he has a plan. He knows about a man who lives in Pethor, and his name is Balaam. And so Balak knows about Balaam. Balaam is a seer, a soothsayer. He can kind of, in the words of Balak, he says, whoever Balaam curses, that person or people are cursed. Whoever he blesses, that person or people are blessed. So Balak has a lot of confidence in Balaam to be able to help him out here. And he wants Balaam to go and curse the Israelites who are camped right outside him, just north of him. He wants Balaam to go and curse them so that whatever they're doing, whatever they're conquering will come of no good and, you know, his nation will stay intact. Well, so he sends some men down there. He sends some, emissaries and, verse 5 and verse 6, Balak, sends the message down there to him. He says, behold, a people come out of Egypt. Behold, they cover the surface of the land and they are living opposite me. Now therefore, please come, curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I may be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed and he whom you curse is cursed. So that's Balak's plan. Send these guys, send the messengers down to Balaam, get Balaam to curse the Israelites. So he does this, and they go down to Balaam, and Balaam receives them, and here's their request. And Balaam says, okay, spend the night to these messengers who come. Spend the night here. I'll inquire of God, and we'll have word in the morning, that the Lord may speak to me. And so God comes to Balaam, and God says, who are these men? So Balaam kind of tells him, explains what's happening. And God says to Balaam, he says, do not go with them. Okay? Balaam, don't go with them, and don't curse the people, the Israelites, for they are blessed. So don't go, don't curse them. These people are blessed. Okay? So Balaam comes up in the morning, he's got his answer, goes back to the messengers, and he tells them, go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to let me go with you. God says, no, so I'm not going. So the messengers go back, they go back down to Moab, and they tell Balak, what Balaam's response is. And so Balak, again, he sends more messengers and he sends more stuff. Now, Balak is not just making this request. He's sending stuff, all right, with this request. He's sending what seems to be the price to get Balaam to do this for him. So this second time he goes down and he sends even more. And so they come down to Balaam again. And thus says Balak, the son of Zippor. Verse 16, he says, let nothing, I beg you, hinder you from coming to me, for I will indeed honor you richly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Please come then and curse this people for me. If Balak knew that he was going to be defeated, Israel's too mighty for him, then he was willing to give Balaam a whole lot. All his eggs were in that basket, a whole lot, if this meant that he could gain a victory over Israel. So he's willing to give him whatever he wanted, essentially. And verse 18, Balaam replies to the servants who have come the second time, and Balaam has a great answer. Look what he says. Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not do anything, either small or great, contrary to the command of the Lord my God. That's a good answer. That's an excellent answer. No matter what you give me, you can give me the world, but I cannot go against the command of God. There's not a better answer, is it? Except Balaam keeps talking. Balaam then says, verse 19, now please, you stay here tonight, and I will find out what else the Lord may speak to me. What has God said? Don't go. You're not going to curse them because they're blessed. Doesn't get much plainer and simpler than that, does it? Now, Balaam wants to do what? He wants something out of this, right? So here he goes. He tells him to stay the night. So God speaks to him again, and God says in verse 20, if the men have come to call you, rise up, go with them, but only speak what I'm going to tell you to speak. All right. You shall only do, you only say exactly what I want you to say. So that's God's answer. He's going to let Balaam go and have him go up there, to Moab, go down there with him. But verse 22, what was God's attitude toward Balaam? He was angry with Balaam. You know, when the creature, the created one, questions the creator, you know, how much right does the creature have? You know, there's something to learn there, that God has said what his will is, and Balaam is willing to do what God says, but what he wants is tugging at him. Alright? And so he's wanting to somehow mesh the two and try to do what God wants and still get what he wants out of it. That sounds a little bit too close to home when I think about it. Because we know what God wants. A lot of us in here, maybe some that are newer in the faith, but a lot of us in here know what God wants us to do. But what draws us? What's the pull? We still want what we want to do. This is exactly Balaam's case. And the lesson is here for us to see how it turns out. So that we can have the lesson and the warning. So God's angry, but Balaam's on his way. So Balaam's on his way. He's riding a donkey. He's got a couple of servants with him on his way. Well, as he's on his way, God is very displeased with him. God sets an angel with a sword, in front of him. Balaam can't see this. Balaam doesn't have any idea. But this angel is in the way of the path. of where he's traveling. And the donkey can see this. He can see the angel with the sword. And so the donkey, instead of the angel is in the way, the donkey goes off the path and into the field. And Balaam, you know, get back up on the path. He hits him, hits the donkey, get back up on the path. And so that happens the first time. So they keep on going, and this time they come in and the path narrows to walls on each side, and the angel appears again, and the donkey sees him, Balaam doesn't, and the donkey presses him over, trying to get, you know, the donkey doesn't want to go anywhere toward that angel. So he's trying to get away, and he presses Balaam up against the wall, smashes his foot, and Balaam smacks him again. All right? So he's there, and finally the donkey, the third time, the donkey, they're in this path again. Donkey can't go anywhere. And so what does the donkey do? He just sits down. Walk. And Balaam, he's ready to get a new donkey. This one didn't work. And he hits him again, waxing. And then God gives this donkey the ability to speak. And the donkey says, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam says to the donkey, "Because you have made a mockery of me. If there had been a sword in my hand, I would have killed you by now." There doesn't seem to be in the scriptures any surprise that he's talking to a donkey, but I would have to imagine there would be some surprise at that fact. But the donkey replies to him. He says, "Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life to this day? Have I ever been accustomed to do so to you?" And Balaam says, "No." And then God opens Balaam's eyes so he can see what's in front of him. And he sees the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand. And Balaam bows to the ground. He knows he's in the presence of God. He bows to the ground. And the angel says to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out as an adversary because your way was contrary to me. But the donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, I would surely have killed you and just let her live." The angel was going to kill Balaam. But the donkey, in trying to evade the situation, saved Balaam's life. Balaam replied, and he says to the angel, "I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing in the way against me. Now then, if it is displeasing to you, I will turn back." Now, what was Balaam sorry for? Yeah, maybe that is exactly it. It's hard to read between the lines, you know, and know what's in his mind completely, but he says, "I did not know that you were standing in the way against me." And he says, if it's your will, then I'll go ahead and turn back. Well, he knows now for sure that this is displeasing. So he gets on down. They go on toward Moab, and Balak comes out to meet him. And Balak says to Balaam in verse 37, "Did I not urgently send you to call you? Why did you not come to me? Am I really unable to honor you?" So the whole thing with Balak had nothing to do with God. It was simply the fact, did I not give you enough? Am I not able to give you anything you want? It was all about the transaction for Balak. So Balaam says, am I able to speak anything at all? The word that God puts in my mouth, that shall I speak. So Balaam goes with Balak, and they go up to a place, Kiriath Huzah, and Balak sacrifices oxen and sheep and sends some to Balaam and the leaders that are with him. So Balak and Balaam, they go up to the high place. Now, we'll see a whole lot of information about the high places. And it's the high places where the Canaanites, the people of the land, they would use these high places to worship and sacrifice to their idols and their gods. So Balak from Moab takes Balaam up to the high places, and it says it up here, Baal. This one is for Baal, for sacrificing and worshiping Baal. So they go up to this high place together, and Balaam says to Balak, verse 1, build 7 altars for me here, prepare 7 bulls and 7 rams for me. Balak did just that, and Balak and Balaam offered up a bull and a ram on each altar. I think another lesson we'll see here, and that Balak is worshiping whom? Baal. Balaam is worshiping whom? God. And they're doing it together. Does that sound familiar? Isn't a lot of that happening today? I mean, a lot of that. I can tell you in one organization that we don't participate in this, obviously, but the Boy Scouts, they have interfaith worship services, you know, Sundays that everybody's camping out on the weekend and doing stuff. Then, you know, we wind up usually leaving and, you know, worshiping. But that's what they do, interfaith. Everybody worships together. This denomination and this denomination, even to the point where, what did they do up in D.C. at the National Cathedral? You know, all these denominations, and they bring in, you know, Jewish rabbis, they bring in, very loosely using Christian, as well, Christianity, and, even Muslim, Islam, they allowed it. And it's all about, whatever the attempt is at tolerance or some kind of weird unity, we have an example here of this same thing. And we're going to see how it turns out. Because it's definitely not God's will. You know anything, it's not God's will. Okay? Alright, so they do this, and Balak gets it all together, and Balaam says, stand beside your burnt offering, and I will go. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you. So Balaam kind of goes away for the Lord to speak to him. And this is what God says in verse 7 through 10. So he takes up, and then Balaam comes back and he tells Balak what God has said. And just the gist of it, you know, God's saying it, and, you know, kind of from the vantage point of Balaam. From Aram, Balak has brought me, Moab's king, from the mountains. Come, curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel. Verse 8, how shall I curse whom God has not cursed? And how can I denounce whom the Lord has not denounced? As I see him from the top of the rocks and I look at him from the hills, behold, a people who dwells apart and will not be reckoned among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number the fourth part of Israel? So, you know, it's the same answer that God gave Balaam back before he left and went on this journey coming up to Moab. We're not going to curse this people. And Balak when he hears this, he says, "What have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, but behold, you have actually blessed them." And Balak is just not getting his money's worth, is the sense from what he's... You've blessed them. You've done the opposite of what I wanted. So Balaam says, "Must I not be careful to speak what the Lord puts in my mouth?" And Balak says, "Please come to me to this other place, where we may sacrifice, and perhaps your God will give you a different answer." So here we go. We're going to another place, going to do the same thing, offer sacrifices, and do this all over again. And so they do. They go up this time to Pisgah, built the altars, sacrifice, and Balaam says, "Stand here beside your offering while I go over to meet the Lord." So God speaks to him. Balaam comes back with God's answer. And it's in verses 18 through 24 that God responds. And verse 19, he says, God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should repent. Has he said, and will he not do it? Or has he spoken, and will he not make it good? In other words, God's saying, what I've said, and that's what I'm going to do. Behold, I've received a command to bless. When he has blessed, then I cannot revoke it. He has not observed misfortune in Jacob, nor has he seen trouble in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them. God brings them out of Egypt. He is for them like the horns of the wild ox, for there is no omen against Jacob, nor is there any divination against Israel. At the proper time it shall be said to Jacob and to Israel what God has done. Behold, a people rises like a lioness, and as a lion it lifts itself, it will not lie down until it devours its prey and drinks the blood of the slain. What's Israel going to do? They're the lion, and they're going to tear up. The whole land is just prey before them because God is doing this for them. And Balak's response, Balak says, "Don't curse them, don't bless them, don't say anything." But Balaam says, "Did I not tell you whatever the Lord speaks, that must I do?" And Balak says, "Please come, I will take you to another place. Perhaps it will be agreeable with God that you curse them for me from there." So here we go again. We're going to another place, and we repeat the whole thing. We go to another thing. They offer sacrifices. And this time there's not any anything, but Balaam speaks to the Lord, or God speaks to him. And in chapter 24, verses 3 through 9 is God's reply this third time. And it essentially is the blessings on Israel once again. He says, verse 5, "How fair are your tents, O Jacob, your dwellings, O Israel, like valleys, they stretch out like gardens, like aloes, like cedars, water will flow." It's all these blessings, all this, the good things that God's going to bring about for them. It goes back to the lion again, and in verse 8, "He will crush their bones in pieces and shatter them with arrows. He couches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares to rouse him?" Who's going to go poke a lion? Who's going to go wake him up? "Blessed is everyone who blesses you, and cursed is everyone who curses you." Israel is blessed, and Balak is just angry at what's happened this third time. So he says, "I called you to curse my enemies, but behold, you've persisted in blessing them these three times." So Balaam then goes and has a fourth event with God, and Balaam prophesies about what's going to happen. And it's a much longer term kind of a prophecy of the nations that will come and prophesy. It also seems to be quite messianic. in the sense in verse 17. Could be talking about David as well as the Messiah in verse 17. A star shall come forth from Jacob, a scepter shall rise from Israel, and shall crush through the forehead of Moab. So some things that will happen on down the line. But what happens next is, you know, Balaam has tried his best. Balaam is only saying what God has told him to say. But what happens next just shows you what kind of man Balaam is. And we don't really understand it until Moses iterates it. But what happens at this point in chapter 31, verse 16, a little bit later on, and Moses recounts something in chapter 31, verse 16. He says that through the counsel of Balaam, verse 16, behold, these caused the sons, he's talking about some women that are there, behold, these caused the sons of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. Peor is the place they're at, Baal of Peor is the place. So the plague was among the congregation of the Lord. What happens is that Balaam counsels Balak on how to get Israel cursed. Now, Balaam has tried, you know, and it hasn't worked these three times, but Balaam says, if you'll do this, then Israel will be cursed. And the plan was that the Midianites, all right, so the Midianites were somewhere down maybe to the southeast of Moab. There were different clans of them in different places, but so the plan, what seems to be, is that the plan was for the Midianites to join with Moab and for them to bring in all their women and lure the men of Israel to them in idolatrous worship, which included fornication and ritual fornication and ceremonies and so forth in this. Balak essentially told them, if you do this, they'll be cursed. And Balaam was right about that. So that's what happens. And in verse 25, this is that event of what happens at Peor, the sin of Baal Peor. And so Israel remained at Shittim. The people began to play the harlot with the daughters of Moab, for they invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel joined themselves to Baal Peor, and the Lord was angry with them. And it culminates, and God sends a plague among them. He sends a plague that goes through them, and it's wiping them out. Moses and some of the others are standing at the doorway of the tent of meeting in verse 6. And even while this is going on, there was a man of Israel from Simeon named Zimri. He comes running through with a Midianite woman named Cozbi. And so he comes, and it was such a brazen and blatant action on his part as he does this, and he's taking her into his tent, and that Phinehas, he comes in there, and he takes a spear, and he goes into the tent, and the two of them are there, and he runs this thing through both of them, and kills them. Well, that stops the plague. God stops the plague, because he saw Phinehas having the same anger and righteous indignation and anger about what was happening, that and he blesses Phinehas because of this, because Phinehas was doing exactly what God wanted to do and was doing, and he had the same attitude. Well, Phinehas, by the way, he is Aaron's grandson, right? So Eliezer, remember, Aaron has two sons, Eliezer's one. This is Eliezer's son. Phinehas. Well, the plague is abated. 24,000 Israelites are killed before this stops. And God says, in verse 17, he spoke to Moses, he says, "Be hostile to the Midianites and strike them. For they have been hostile to you with their tricks from which they have deceived you in the affair of Peor, in the affair of Cozbi, the daughter of the leader of Midian." So we'll jump over into chapter 31 now, because we see the rest of the story. Now there's a few things that happen, there's a little bit that happens between that point and what we're about to talk about, but we'll combine it here, to keep kind of the story going. God speaks to Moses and says, "Take full vengeance for the sons of Israel on the Midianites. Afterward, you will be gathered to your people." So, Midian, because of what they did, they're about to get totally wiped out and devastated, and slaughtered. So Moses sends, in verse 6, he sends 1,000 from each tribe to the war. And guess who the priest is who goes with them? Phinehas. He sends Phinehas to the war with them, and with the holy vessels and the trumpets for the alarm in his hand. So they go to war against Midian, and they kill every male. They kill all the kings of the land. The sons of Israel, verse 9, they capture the women of Midian and their little ones, their cattle and all their flocks and all the goods that they plundered. They burned all their cities where they lived and their camps with fire. They take all the spoil and all the prey, both of man and beast. And verse 12, they bring the captives. Now, who are the captives? All the men were killed. Their women, children, bring them to Moses and to Eleazar. Back to their camp where they're camped. And Moses and Eleazar and all the leaders come out to them, and Moses was angry with the officers of the army and the captains. Moses says, "Have you spared all the women?" Now, what was it that the women were involved with just previously in this whole event? They're the ones who came in and drew and lured and brought out the Israelites. So, verse 16, "Behold," this is what we read before, "Behold, these are the ones," the women, "that caused the sons of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. So the plague was among the congregation of the Lord." So now, therefore, Moses says, "Kill all the women who are of age, all the ones who are virgins, you can keep, you can spare, but everyone else is to die." And so they completely devastate and slaughter Midian for what they've done. Then the rest of the verses 19 through 24, Eleazar, the priest, he tells them, he makes sure that all of those who went out to war against Midian, what have they got to do? What state are they in? Since they've gone out to war, what have they been doing? What have they been near? Yeah, they've been killing and dead bodies. So they're all unclean, aren't they? Well, all of the things that they took with them are unclean. Remember us talking about all that? All the people themselves would be unclean. The things that were used would be unclean. All of this had to go through a process, and Eleazar's making sure that when they come back, they're doing all that to clean all that up and to make themselves right. Well, after this, the captains, the officers of Israel who went out to war, they come back and they count their losses, their casualties. How many casualties did Israel have? They didn't lose a single man in all of this battle and all of this destruction and slaughtering. They didn't lose anyone. And so they felt very blessed. And so they wanted to, think what it is. They give a free will offering. Remember, we talked about those. They're not required. They're not mandated by God in His commandments, but it was essentially a free will offering they wanted to give to God, for atonement and for what He had done for them. So they brought as the offering, each man, verse 50, in chapter 31. Gold, armlets, bracelets, signet rings, earrings, necklaces, things that they had, you know, looted and the spoils that they had gotten themselves, they brought a larger portion of that to them. Now, besides this extra portion that they're giving, in the verses previous to this, all of the spoils was divided up. A portion went to God and to the priest, a portion went to the people and the tribes. It was all divided up. But this, the officers, this was an additional thing that they did because they realized that God's hand was in this and they were very blessed. So they gave, an extra portion. So, it didn't work out too well for Balaam, did it? He wanted to do what he wanted to do. God had told him what he wanted him to do. And he tried to mesh that together, didn't he? That doesn't work. It didn't work for him. It will not work for us. When we think about ourselves as Christians being redeemed, we're not our own, are we? We don't belong to ourselves. It's not, we have to give up completely ourselves of what we want, you know, this, everything that's earthly on this plane. As the redeemed, we belong to God. He paid the price for it. He bought us. And if we keep that in our minds, it makes it much easier to understand and think about, you know, I can give up this. I can give up that. I don't need to do that. It's a life for God that He's blessed us with. All right. Thank y'all for your attention.